Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Let's start out this podcast like I always do when it comes to determining my investment decisions. I ask myself the question, what is inflation doing on a second derivative basis, and what is the context of economic growth? I'll skip to the conclusion. Growth and inflation are slowing, and here is some evidence from economic data. A gauge of pending home sales of existing homes sunk in July to the lowest level on record. On record, as high prices and borrowing costs continue to scare buyers away. A National Association of Realtors index of contract signings fell 5.5% to 70.2 last month. The lowest in data going back to 2000. The ISM Manufacturing Index came in at 47.2 in August, contracting for the fifth month in a row and down for 21 of the past 22 months. For almost 2 years, the manufacturing sector of the economy has been in a recession. New orders, backlogs, production, and employment were all contracting. And supplier deliveries were slowing too. U.S. real gross domestic income, not product, income, is at a current level of $22.31 trillion, up from $22.24 trillion last quarter. This is a change of just 0.31% from last quarter. This flies in the face of the GDP figure, which showed growth of 3% during Q2 at a seasonally adjusted annualized rate. And these measurements are either sides of the same coin. Income and spending. GDP measures spending domestically, and gross domestic income measures, of course, income received. And income and spending should be about the same in the long run. But here we see GDI is much weaker than GDP. The U.S. personal savings rate dropped to 2.9% for the month of July. That compares with 4.4% last year and has plunged from the long-term average of 8.4% all the way down to 2.9%. The all-time low savings rate figure was 1.4% back in July of 2005. Such a paltry rate of savings begs the question, how can the consumer keep up the pace of spending with such low savings rate? Piling on credit card debt is unlikely, not when they are already carrying a record $1.14 trillion in credit card debt. The average balance per customer now stands at $6,329, up 4.8% year over year. Credit card delinquencies are also higher across the board. The New York Fed and TransUnion found that the data on credit card delinquencies is spiking and scary. Over the last year, roughly 9.1% of credit card balances transitioned into delinquency. That is very high from where they were just a few years ago. This is the truth. Borrowers with revolving credit card debt are maxing out their credit cards. This according to Michelle Ranieri, vice president and head of U.S. research and consulting at TransUnion. Quote, that's usually a pretty good indicator that people are stretched. Close quote. And they are. They're stretched from a debt perspective, and they're mostly stretched because inflation has wiped them out. The level of inflation has wiped them out, and yet it is accelerating from here. On the labor front, job openings slumped to their lowest level in 3.5 years in July. That is what the Labor Department reported today in another sign of slack in the labor market. The job openings and labor turnover survey showed that available positions fell to 7.67 million on the month, off 237,000 from June's downwardly revised number and the lowest level since January 2021. Now, Wall Street is betting that the well-telegraphed and already priced in 75 basis points of rate cuts between September 18th and the end of the year will not only turbocharge GDP growth, but will also propel stocks to higher levels. A slightly lower Fed funds rate is supposed to stop rising delinquencies and defaults in credit cards and auto loans, and is hoped to stem the rising tide of personal and corporate bankruptcies, as well as put a halt to the rising unemployment rate. The Fed put is thought to be about to be deployed, and that means the recession is back on ice and off the table. But even if that fantasy actually comes to fruition, and I don't think that's the case, what is virtually impossible to achieve is the anticipated 15% earnings per share growth for the S&P 500 companies during 2025. Earnings growth has a very close correlation to nominal GDP growth, which is real GDP plus inflation. And that acts as a kind of speed limit for how fast earnings can grow without massive tax cuts, which are not coming. Earnings growth tends to rhyme with nominal or current dollar GDP growth. That makes perfect sense. Aggregate earnings cannot grow faster than the real economy, and that is in the real growth plus inflation. Well, nominal GDP growth came in at 5.5% in Q2 of this year. For reference, nominal GDP growth clocked in at 10% for 2022, and the growth rate of earnings was 5% back then. But now we have 5% nominal growth. And since both growth and inflation are projected to fall from the current mid-single-digit level, which is why the Fed is pursuing a rate-cutting cycle in the first place, nominal GDP growth is likely to fall to around 4% from where it is, 5.5%, maybe even less. Therefore, not only is that 15% projected growth rate of earnings not going to happen, but even if it did, the S&P 500 is already trading at 21 times its forward PE ratio, which assumes that growth rate of 15% is achieved. And that 21 PE ratio, forward PE, is far above the 10-year average, which is 17.9. In other words, Wall Street is not only vastly overestimating earnings for next year, but is slapping an absurd valuation on those earnings that aren't going to happen. In other words, the setup for equities can hardly be more unfavorable, and they are particularly vulnerable to a recession if one does materialize. And speaking of recession, a milestone was tripped today on the recession watch. The 10 minus 2-year Treasury yield spread uninverted today for the first time since July of 2022. This latest inversion was one of the steepest in history and was the longest inversion ever. The inverted yield curve has a perfect track record of predicting a recession, or at least, at the very least, a trenchant economic collapse that begins within 3 to 6 months from the point from which it first uninverts. So the clock is now ticking. Now, before I go, I want to highlight a few reasons behind the record high price in gold. I'll give you three. Number one, international countries are dumping U.S. dollar currency reserve assets in favor of gold, which is an asset that they can hold in their own possession and cannot be confiscated by U.S. sanctions. Number two, falling nominal and real U.S. interest rates are providing less competition for the holding of gold, which is a non-income producing asset. In other words, investors have a faltering confidence in the U.S. government's willingness and ability to fight inflation. And that is abundantly clear by the fact that Powell is now fully projected to start cutting rates, even though inflation has already wiped out the middle class and is rising faster than his asinine 2% target at 2.9% year over year. And number three, investors now understand that the U.S. government is also unwilling and unable to tackle its debt and deficit problems. We have $1 trillion interest payment, a $2 trillion deficit, and that is occurring in an era of historically low unemployment and trend GDP growth. And these deficits are projected to grow towards $3 trillion per year by 2034. And that assumes $2 trillion going to $3 trillion, and that assumes no recession and a quiescence in interest rates forever. no spike in borrowing costs, and no recession, which occurs every few years. You know, every five, six, 7 years we have a recession. Well, guess what? The CBO says, well, we don't predict there's going to be a recession. Good luck with that. That means the government is heading towards insolvency, which there's a good case to be made that it already is. And insolvency always leads to intractable inflation, and we are clearly heading down that path. An insolvent government and bankrupt currencies always benefit gold. Now, we believe that the Fed's well-telegraphed rate cuts will be inadequate, absolutely inadequate, to stop the current disinflation from turning into deflation and recession. We remain on watch for a significant decline in GDP growth, which is already in progress, and for earnings to fall far short, most importantly, for earnings to fall far short of expectations. So we're in sector two now, which is disinflation. That remains our current allocation, which is bond proxies, gold, low volatility stocks. We have some India in there. And then we even have a yield curve steepener. And a high yield short to boot. Sector one remains the projection, and the model will guide us on the timing. I am not going to tell the market what to do. I'm going to make my decisions based on the IDEC model, which front runs the multi-trillion dollar wirehouses that panic as the recession becomes fully manifest. We will be well prepared before that.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you are not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.